Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it, one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
And my name is Quinn, pronouns they and them. This week, we're talking about season 2, episode 22. 222. The one with the two parties.
Which aired on May 2.
May 2nd.
May 2nd, 1996. Wild. This episode was written by Alexa Young and directed by Michael Lembeck. Let's get into the episode. So as you all know, we've decided to switch our formatting a little bit. So instead of giving you kind of the IMDb summary followed by Emily's weird funky summary, we're just going to do a longer, more detailed summary and then talk about our feelings around the episode in general. Which honestly, I think we talked about doing this framework specifically because we were watching this episode and we were like, how the F are we going to go scene by scene in this episode? Because it's just like a mesh of glory.
Yeah. And if you haven't recently watched this episode, I strongly encourage you to go rewatch it. Because honestly, I think it's like one of the best episodes of Friends of all time.
I would agree. And I would also say, like, you know, when you've watched the same TV show so many times, like over and over and over again, that you like, you're not actually really watching it anymore. You're kind of just like on your phone or it's in the background. You're doing something else. Like you're not like just like immersed in it. I would like suggest that if you can, just like sit down and immerse yourself in this episode again. Like phone down. Don't do the dishes. Just like sit, put a blanket on your knees, eat some popcorn and watch this episode. Because like the full body acting that happens in this episode is just like such slapstick humor. It's just,
oh my God,
it's perfect.
I feel like this episode is like, it's all that we love about Friends in one episode.
Yeah.
You know, it's has some slapstick humor. It has some witty humor. It has like really good chemistry amongst everyone. And then it also has like, all the characters are at their fullest.
Yeah.
And there's like those, it's hilarious, but there's also,
it hits you in the feels.
Yeah. It has, it has a bittersweet and kind of like honest and sincere issues in it. You know, it's like, it doesn't shy away from the actual issues at heart, even though they're making light of the entire situation. Yeah. And it's everything that we love about Friends. Very well executed it in one episode and written by none other than Alexa Young.
Fan fave, Alexa Young.
I'm like such a huge Alexa Young fan.
Yeah.
She also writes a lot now for Grace and Frankie, which I'm like, makes sense. I see that.
Yeah, totally.
It's, I want to shake her hand one day and be like, thank you.
or elbow, because, you know, pandemic life.
Oh, God. Speaking of which, I'm still getting over my cold.
But it's not COVID.
Yeah. Apparently the common cold still exists.
It's there quite common, I hear.
Well, I thought it wasn't so common anymore since considering that, you know, like everything else has been eradicated. Yeah. Like last year, the flu.
There were like 8 people in Quebec who had the flu last
year. Yeah, exactly.
Like, literally.
Which proves that
washing your hands and wearing masks is helpful to prevent the spread of illness.
All of the protocols that we were taking did help, except that COVID was just so much more intense than the common flu. Which is, but anyway.
Cool. So I want to summarize the episode. Are you ready?
Go for it, Emily.
Okay, cool. So I was going to say that feel free
I interrupt you first?
What?
I think we need to welcome someone to the Smelly Cat family. So we want to say a big welcome to, and I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce your name. Ike?
E-I-K-E. Hello and welcome.
Welcome to the Smelly Cat community. We have a new patron, everyone. Yay! This is me clapping my hands.
Woo!
I feel like we need to do like a cheers audio in the background.
A cheers audio.
Like huzzah!
Oh my God. Oh my God. Imagine if we started adding like laugh tracks. like how Friends has laugh track? Like,
no, they had a live audience and not a laugh track. It's okay. Completely different.
There's some episodes that actually does have a laugh track instead of a
laugh. Yeah, I know. When it has like these big reveals, I know. I get it. I get it.
Blah, blah, blah. But anyways, all this to say that if you aren't already a patron of ours, our patrons will be receiving... Or there's already some bonus episodes out on our feed. We have extended spoiler full episodes on our feed, and there will be more to come. And we plan to release a bonus episode pretty much close to every 4 to 6 weeks for the time, next time being, for the time being, for the near future, whatever the sentence is.
When we did not release an episode last week, did you bring up the plans for the summer?
I did not.
Should we talk about it briefly?
Sure.
Okay, everyone.
What is the plan for the summer?
So, as you guys know, we're coming to, as you can tell, like we're on episode 22 at this point. So we're coming to the end of the season.
Woo-woo!
And we've decided that we're going to take the summer off of regular seasonal...
Programming.
Yes. But what we want to do with our Patreon, is, and what we're starting, I'm very excited about it, we're going to start a book club.
Woo-woo.
So we're going to do, it's going to start off as like school's out summer book club, but we're hoping to continue it. And what we want to do is have basically a book club for our patrons that is a great tandem with the content that we're doing in the podcast. So essentially, do we want to talk about the first book that we're...
Sure. Yeah. So this is a book that I've already read because I am a huge, huge fan of Aubrey Gordon, who is one of the podcast hosts, is a co-host of the podcast Maintenance Phase, which is basically an epic podcast that debunks kind of health myths. Both co-hosts are journalists, and Aubrey Gordon wrote the book, What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat. And we thought it would be a good episode just because we've talked a lot about fat phobia in Friends over the last two seasons, which will continue. And it's a good episode that goes into not just, you know, fat phobia in terms of self-esteem and confidence and the way that the world perceives you, but also fat phobia in the way that systemic barriers exist across the world for fat people. So it's a really, really great book. I've read it on audiobook. It's like the bomb, and I can't wait to reread it. The plan, I think, is for us to do a little bit of like an intro to the book episode on our Patreon feed, followed by, you know, some poll questions on our Patreon feed for people to provide us their thoughts and feelings while you're reading the book alongside us, and then followed by kind of a summary episode that will include all of your thoughts and feelings and audio comments if you want to give them to us for us to include into our episodes. So all of the details will be a little bit more clear and less all over the place on our Patreon in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. So, and this is kind of coming up because we've gotten a lot of feedback from you guys that you really enjoy the more like kind of educational content that we've put out, but we very often feel like we're not necessarily the ones that are the most qualified to be being educational about things. And so we feel like having basically being able to, we're choosing books that are all an audiobook, first of all, because we think that audiobooks are a great complement to podcast. So essentially we'll be listening to audiobooks and that are going to have content that help kind of expand our mind on what we're talking about every week in the episode. And I feel like this podcast is really about kind of like both looking at the media and like, you know, mainstream concepts of things and then deconstructing them and trying to just be a better person. And I feel like this book club is going to be a large part of that, where we're going to deconstruct our concepts of things that we've been socialized to believe, and have a place to discuss it with each other and be able to then use that information as we talk about the episodes to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about self-growth together, everyone, while still enjoying one of our favorite shows.
Okay, so without further ado, because we've already been talking for a while, let us start and summarize the episode. So like I was saying, feel free to jump in at any point with your thoughts and feelings as I summarize. I didn't prep anything.
I have no thoughts or feelings ever, Emily. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty sure you interrupt me like 80% of
the time. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, so Let's get into it. So this episode starts off with all of the friends, except for Rachel, eating at Monica's work, the Moondance Diner. They're all kind of sitting around. They're sitting at the bar. Monica's serving coffee, which I don't understand how she's serving coffee when she's supposed to be a cook. Her role is very weird at this diner, but we'll get into that. They're in the middle of planning Rachel's birthday party. There are some excellent jokes that happen throughout this scene, and they basically decide that they're gonna throw a fun party, not any like fancy elegant dinner. They're just gonna have a party.
I love how that whole conversation really just is like like Monica is in this ridiculous outfit and she's like I just feel like she needs this party. You know what I mean? Everyone's complaining about the way that she is setting it up and like planning it. And she's like, what? They're like, why do we need food committees?
Yeah. And parties where we poach things. It's probably because she's been like a line cook making fries and she used to work at a fancy restaurant. Like she wants to like make something fancy for people.
Yeah. Poor thing.
Yeah. And then we cut to credits and they're back and they're at Central Perk. Rachel hasn't arrived yet, but they're all kind of sitting there planning around who they're going to invite to the party. We get some gross Joey moments. As they're talking about who they should invite to the party, Rachel walks in. She's kind of in a huff. She's stressed. She's putting on her apron, getting ready for her shift at Central Perk. And turns out that she was at her sister's graduation. No one expected her sister to graduate from college, but her whole family was there. And as we learned from a previous episode, her mom and her dad are getting a divorce. So it turns out that they can't even sit in the same room together because it becomes this just disastrous scene at the graduation. And
is it the reverend had to shush them?
Yeah, exactly. Which also, is there a reverend at colleges?
Was it a reverend or was it, or maybe it was just
something tutu. Jean, wasn't it Reverend Tutu or something?
Yeah.
Anyways, so they basically say that, you know, let's not invite the parents to the party, which like also, is that a thing? Like when you're 20, like 7, 26, 27, like it's just assumed you would invite your
parents you would
to a
not.
Birthday party? Like, yeah, I feel like it's just not a thing. I don't know. But anyways, I would
I guess maybe like the type of party that Monica was planning, you know? Where you have to put the markers back on tightly.
Yes.
And please leave your 10 verbs on the table before you leave the party.
Yes, you're spoiling.
Sorry.
We're going to get there. Yeah, and so Monica basically says, like, well, I've already invited her mom, so we got to invite her mom. And we then cut to the next scene, which is they're all in Monica and Rachel's apartment. And we kind of go throughout this entire episode back and forth between a variety of scenes in which we get a lot of slapstick humor, which starts with...
Well, wait, first of all, let's set this up that they're setting up for the party and then Rachel's dad shows up and they try to like get him to leave. He obviously doesn't leave. And so they have to split the party in two. So they basically convince Rachel's dad, not very well, that the party's taking place at... Joey and Chandler's place across the hall.
This is just the staging area.
Yeah. Monica's apartment is just the staging area. And then Rachel's mom stays at Monica's party. And then there's all these other things that ensue, like, you know, Chandler and Joey getting all like, the women to be in their apartment party. And then, you know, you have like the boring Monica party or the word game Monica party versus the volleyball inside and
Jello shots. I don't know.
Jello shots party. Yeah. Maybe it just feels like it.
Yeah. I feel like they have Jello shots at other parties moving forward.
And I feel like every time or like last time we watched this episode, Emily was like, said the funniest thing, observation of her life. And she was like, this is pre-sober Emily party, referring to Chandler and Joey. To sober Emily party, which is Monica's party.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like, I used to throw parties like Chandler and Joey's parties.
It's so funny though, because I feel like at the same time, the Monica party is like always who you were underneath the Chandler and Joey party. You know?
I don't know if that's...
Oh my God, you definitely were.
I feel like that's an insult in a lot of ways.
No, you're just like, you... like to do things that Monica likes to do.
Very cute. Sure. I like word games, but I usually like my word games to be, I was going to say alone events, and then I realized that's not true. I like to do word games with people. Whoever says that crossword puzzles are not a social activity are incorrect. Crossword puzzles are a social activity. Point final. Anyways, all this to say, I don't think I ever mentioned it, but this is supposed to be a surprise party for Rachel. So Rachel comes in. She walks into first her and Monica's apartment. They all shout surprise. Her mom is there. It's like, oh my God, mom, what are you doing here? This is so funny. And then Monica, without any warning, kind of rushes them out of the apartment to go over next door to Chandler and Joey's apartment. And they're like, okay, what the hell is going on? They walk into Joey and Chandler's apartment and everyone shouts surprise. And lo and behold, her dad is sitting there on the chair. And so she has this realization of kind of what her friends have done, which is like accidentally invited both and they have to like split this party, and that's what her whole night becomes. It becomes kind of this back and forth, and we get a really, really good montage of every time she's kind of sitting with her dad, he's complaining about her mom, and then every time she's sitting with her mom, she's complaining about her dad, and it's just like this endless.
We have this really great, they just sort of, what song is it that's playing when they do this moment, where it's like they kind of do this montage or like this flipping back and forth of her listening to her parents arguing and then sort of like trailing off into like this hazy, dizzy fog
moment. 90s effect.
Yeah, 90s effect. And it's just very well done. Like, it just... See, it's such a funny episode, but it's also just gets you in the feels, you know?
Gets you right in the feels.
And you're just like, oh, Rachel, you poor thing.
And we'll get into, like, some of the funnier scenes in a second. Like, there's just a lot to talk about, especially with Ross. But just to finish up the episode. So, basically, after this kind of dizzying scene, Rachel is sitting outside in the hallway. Chandler comes to sit down with her and wants to know how she's doing. And she kind of just has this little bit of a breakdown where she's like, is this what it's going to be now? Like, my dad in one room, my mom in the other room. And, like, me just having to be the middleman between this conflict, you know, in this conflict. And then she talks to Chandler about this really pure moment in her life, basically, in which her dad... Like, her whole family were taking this moment on their dad's boat, and they just had this, like, pure family moment, and it's, like, a tradition. I mean,
yeah, but it's funny, because it's, like, she talks about all, like, the arguments and the issues leading up to it, to, like, this one moment where they're all snuggling under the blanket.
Yeah.
It just feels very real, you know, like, where, you know, your family gets caught up in these arguments, but then there's, like, those moments, and it's just, like, the tradition that you do every year, you know?
Yeah. I do think, there's something to be said about that. Like, you know, you take the bad with the good sometimes when you think of memories. Like, you're like, oh, that part really sucked, but that part was really good. And, like, they couldn't exist one without the other sort of thing, you know? And so then Rachel's just sad and she gives Chandler a big hug and... It's like a pretty cute moment between Chandler and Rachel. And I don't think we see a lot of moments between Chandler and Rachel. So, like, I think it's a nice one. And then...
I find this scene particularly nice because Chandler is, like, really... You know, yes, he has his humor in there. And he, like, always deflects with humor. But he's also, in that moment, very sincere. Yeah. You know, like, he... Like, this is a place where he's able to... be in the, like, emotions in a sense, you know, like, it's like this, I've been here before and, like, I see what you're going through. And it was, I just find it actually kind of interesting to see him kind of serious and being reflective and insightful from his past. Yeah. And I don't feel like we get to see that very often with him. And I feel like that's actually one of those very memorable scenes to me. Like, it's stuck with me since I was, like, I first saw it many, many, many years ago.
And I do think, like, there's this ongoing joke that, like, Chandler's awkward in, like, you know, in, like, he's like, I make jokes when I'm uncomfortable. Like, that's kind of his line, right? Yeah. Like,
hi, I'm Chandler. I make jokes when I'm uncomfortable.
But, like, I do think there's something to be said that he does that specifically when he's in a group setting. Like, whereas when he's...
Or people he doesn't know.
Yeah. Whereas when he's, like, one-to-one with his friends, like, he does have quite a few pure emotional moments. And I think, like, that's actually a really real depiction of a character, like, of a person. Like, I think that, you can be uncomfortable with like confrontation or like emotions when you're like in a social setting with people you don't necessarily like feel super comfortable with. Whereas like when you're with your people, you can be more vulnerable emotionally and it's not that big of a deal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, yeah. And so then all that to say that Rachel's mom decides to leave, but at the same time, Rachel's dad wants to leave and they kind of have this really hilarious, awkward moment in the hallway where they're trying to make sure that Rachel's dad doesn't know that his mom is there. They keep like kind of pulling one away from the other to the point where Joey has to literally kiss Mrs. Green in order to have her dad, Rachel's dad, leave without anyone, without him noticing.
How Mrs. Green is like positioned as she's getting kissed by Joey, where she's like kind of half collapsing and he's like only holding her up by her head.
It's really intense. It's also like,
but it's so funny. It's just, there's so many good things about this episode.
This is, I want to talk a little bit about like the consent of that kiss after, because I think it's like, it's an interesting conversation, but because I would like to only see it as hilarious, you know, but I think it's there's more to be said about that. Yeah. And then anyways, basically the episode ends where they're blowing a wish on the flan that Monica made for Rachel's birthday, and a volleyball falls into flan just as her wish came true.
Those things never come true.
Okay, so let's kind of talk about our feelings now. Is there anything in particular that you want to talk about in this episode? If the answer is no, then I can say things.
Yeah, no. I to be honest, I didn't think of any particular thing that I want to talk about. I was like just looking forward to talking about the episode.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Ross's role in this. Like kind of reflect on it a little bit.
Cool. Yeah, I'm into that.
And then I have some thoughts for our, you know, like the end of the episode where now we're doing some spoily zone. I have like a few different things that I want to talk about.
Yeah, I also want to kind of talk about how therapy is depicted in TV in the 90s versus now. Maybe not even in TV, but therapy in general in the 90s versus now. I think that comes up in this episode. We already talked about Chandler and Rachel.
Therapy?
We already talked about Chandler and Rachel bonding over divorce. So, like, you know, we can go into that a little bit more if we want. And then I just want to talk about, just in general, the slapstick humor in this. And, like, I honestly feel like we could just do an episode only on Ross's character acting in this entire episode.
Oh, my God. Like, let's just talk about Ross for a second here.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Because, like, oh, my God. He, like, okay, as the character, he just really rolls with the punches here.
Yeah.
And it's freaking hilarious. Like, he just really is on board. Actually, okay, let's just zoom out for a second and just observe how, like, all of Rachel's friends in that moment where they realize that there's going to be something uncomfortable happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they all just freaking rally. Like, no one says anything to anyone else. Like, they just, like, rally. And they're like, okay, this is what's happening now. They're all on the same page. This is what we're doing. Like, no one questions it. Everyone's in it 110%. And it's just like we're going to keep this from crashing, like, no matter what the cost.
And they just, like, they really... Yeah, like, I like what you said about how they don't really talk about it, and, like, I think that's part of the humor of it, but I think, like, they're just, like, all on the same page. They just know what they need to do, and they're doing it, and that's it. Yeah, for sure, it's great. Yeah, well, that, like, we, you know, anyways, we're gonna talk later about who the friend of the episode is, but I think, like, we said that we actually feel like they're all the best friend of the episode, like, they're rallying.
Let's talk about it now, Emily.
Okay. Right. Spoilers.
Spoilers for this episode. Yeah. And I guess I just, something that like makes me like Ross is just like, I feel like he's his best self in this episode.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's interesting because it's like you have him who's usually someone that like can't laugh at himself. mm-hmm. has a hard time being in awkward situations.
Totally.
You know, or like making a fool of himself or like being seen in a way that he doesn't want to be seen.
Oh, but Ross is like perpetually making a fool of himself.
I know. Exactly. Right.
But like, but I do think that I wouldn't say that he has a hard time like making a fool of himself. I think he often makes a fool of himself. I think he has a hard time with like more ego shattering things.
Right. I guess in this scenario, like, I feel like if it wasn't for the fact that he was in a situation where it's like he was supporting his partner in a way that like she was kind of emotionally reliant on him,
yeah.
you know, and this like supportive way was like deepened their connection in a sense, that he would be a lot less rolling with these punches.
That's true.
Because yeah. like I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but like I just like, yeah. there's just so many times where it's just like this is his first impression or like mm-hmm. you know, a significant impression on his partner's parents, and he's just like,
yeah,
does not matter. Like,
he just needs Rachel to be okay.
Yeah. His dedication is like, mm-hmm. yeah.
Like, I do think that, like, we've talked about this a little bit.
Already Rue.
Already. Wow. What a wrong time to say that for the first time.
And you're just like, in that moment, you're like, Ross, you really, you're just doing your best. Like, it's so relatable.
Yes.
You're like trying so hard. You keep like messing up in all the ways. And you're just like, just gotta keep going.
Yeah, so good.
Like so many other people, like if you had any other option at that point, you just run from that person, you know, like
yeah. I think we've talked about it before, but I do feel like Ross, like when he first shows up in this relationship with Rachel, like obviously we've deconstructed Ross a lot this season, and like the stuff with the list, and like, you know, we feel less like the writers maybe want us to feel when it comes to the one with the list. But there's a bunch of other moments that Ross is like a total dick, and we're supposed to see it as him being like sincere, doing a grand gesture, X, Y, Z. But I think like the way that Ross, when he's in this relationship in these first few episodes, like he shows up. Like I think that there is quite a bit of like, we're seeing Ross at his best.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's interesting because we obviously have talked about how we feel about Ross in general, but like in this episode, he's just like, he's here. He's
so here.
There. Yeah. Showing up. Okay. I want to run through some like just very excellent moments for a few seconds. Okay. When Rachel's mom shows up and Monica closes the door in her face and then opens it again and says, "Oh, I thought you were Rachel." And then Chandler tries to jump in and goes, "Yes, because, you know,
you're so young.
And then Phoebe says, "And because you're both white women."
What I find so funny about that is that, like, it's just not something I would expect from a 90s TV show. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I almost feel like that would be a more common joke now.
Right, yeah. You know? Yeah, I see that. Yeah. And then, okay, there's a couple of other excellent moments. Just like, and if you've watched Friends enough time, I'm sure you could like literally close your eyes right now and picture Ross wearing Mr. Green's glasses with a cigarette hanging,
oh my God,
out of his upper lip.
And furthermore, I'm sure you can envision when he takes the cigarette out of his mouth and he like peels it off of
the dryness of his inner lip, inner upper lip.
He's just like, just moistening the tip for you.
Oh, it's so rough. But it's also like, as an ex-smoker, like that's such a real thing where you like put a cigarette up there for a second while you're like putting on your coat or whatever it is. And then you do have to like peel it off your upper lip and like smoke it.
It's good.
So well done. Oh my God. Yeah, we get another excellent line, which is, "You wear bifocals?" Yes. "I have a condition that requires me to wear two different sets of focals."
Like, so clearly good. He doesn't really know what it is, but he's like deducing it.
And then another moment when he's trying to keep the door closed, Chandler and Joey slam the door shut so that Mr. Green doesn't go into the hallway. And Ross is on the other side holding the knob, bending his knees down into a squat. And Rachel's mom says, "Ross, what are you doing?" And he says, "I'm getting ready for the water skiing."
Clearly, he's never done.
Oh, those are just like some key, excellent Ross moments. But,
oh my God. Yeah.
Or... I think I need a scotch. Great, let me get that for you. Great, I'll be right back with a scotch on the rocks. Neat. Cool. No, neat as in no ice.
I've definitely, like, learned what on the rocks versus neat meant through
Friends,
this
totally.
Episode.
Yeah. Because Monica always drinks scotch on the rocks with a twist. Which, like, the twist is supposed to be, like, lemon rind or lime rind, which, like, is so not a normal drink, like, or, like, a common drink. Maybe it was more of a common drink in the 90s, but I remember when I was, like, 18 or 19, and I, like, went to a bar for the first time when I was trying to be cool, I, like, pretty sure that I ordered scotch on the rocks with a twist, like, trying to pretend that I knew what I was talking about when clearly I did not.
Oh, my God. It's interesting. I decided to Google scotch on the rocks with a twist, and the first thing, like, the first three things are Friends related.
Yeah, that's really funny.
One of them is the Reddit page or group or whatever, subreddit, How You Doing?
Nice. Cool. Yeah, so...
So wait, I want to bring up, can we transition away from Ross? So I want to bring up how this is like the first time that we're kind of getting to know a few different characters here. So first of all, like Gunther at their party, like this is like the first time that they would like invite Gunther to their party. Yeah. And I definitely enjoy it. I think that his dancing skills are on point. He's very cute. I love it. And then this is also the first time that we're meeting Rachel's dad. So Rachel's dad is played by Ron Lieben. And Ron Liebman was originally offered the role as Rachel's dad, but he turned it down because he was like, "I'm a serious actor. Mm. I don't do comedies or sitcoms." But he's a serious dramatic actor. He does drama mostly. But apparently his daughter found out and was super upset with him because she was a huge Friends fan. And so she really pushed him. She really wanted him to be in the show. And so essentially when they pitched to him Friends, the show pitched to him to be Dr. Green, who was like, had this like bitter streak in him, this harsh, bitter kind of like dark side to him. That's when Ron Liebman agreed to take the part, essentially.
What was he originally auditioning for?
I don't think he was, I think they just offered him part and he was like, "I don't want to be a sitcom." I don't think he really knew much about it.
Okay.
And also he very much did not know anything about Friends, the show, because apparently when he was on set for the first time, he started talking to Lisa Kudrow as though she was Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, that's real embarrassing.
Yeah. Considering like at that point, they're like pretty famous too.
Oh, man. Yeah. How did you find this out?
I found this out on the internet.
Oh, okay. I guess where on the internet? I'm curious.
Right now I'm on IMDb.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. That's hilarious. I love that. Okay, because this is the first introduction of Rachel's dad, let's talk a little bit about Rachel's dad. Like, we don't get a lot from him in this episode, right? Like, this is the second time we're seeing Rachel's mom, right? Mm-hmm. Rachel's mom has already showed up. This is the first time we're seeing Rachel's dad. And, like, our first impressions, like, pretending that you haven't seen all of Friends, right? Like, mind you, he doesn't change much throughout all 10 seasons.
But I feel like, should we be saving some of this conversation for the spoily zone at the end?
No, I want to talk just about him in this episode.
Okay, cool, great.
Like, right away, he comes in with this kind of gruff attitude.
Definitely gruff.
Like, clearly sarcastic, kind of sees them as being a little bit childish, I think, to a certain sense. Like, which, like, to be fair, they're all kind of having to act childish in order to...
Yeah, really.
But yeah, like, this... He just seems kind of sarcastic and bitter, and then...
There's definitely also a certain amount of entitlement.
Yeah.
Like, I know what life is about, and therefore I'm entitled to more things than you.
Totally. And he also, like, if you think about it, he never was actually invited to the party.
I know.
But he just, like, decides to stay. Which, like, can you imagine, like, Pa showing up to your apartment and being like, oh, you're throwing a party? Like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. Like, he would literally be like, I just need to drop this thing off and then I'll go. Or like, I just need to repair your toilet and then I'll go. Yeah. But like,
yeah, he would definitely not stay unless he was like very much invited to stay. Yeah.
And also our parents, I don't think our parents would just show up to our apartment without warning. But I guess this was pre-cell phones.
Yeah.
Whereas
I think,
like,
this is a time where people showing up at each other's door is much more common.
Right, because you don't like know constantly their whereabouts. Which yeah. like you do now, pretty much.
And then yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking about that as we were watching this episode right before recording. And I was like, I could also imagine, like, at no other time, I don't think this is really, like, now or future in the season, does, like, he just stop by, you know? And up yeah. until this point, we've never met him before.
Right.
But I could imagine, like, what made sense to me maybe was that the graduation where there was that big argument was the day before. And I could imagine that when going through a divorce, you know, there is a certain amount of, like, wanting to bond with your kids a little bit more. Both because, like, I'm sure he, you know, doesn't have anyone at home now.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, Rachel's birthday, so I'll just stop by. But I do think there's, like, a very large amount of entitlement to just be, like, I'm entitled to see my daughter on her birthday and not yeah. consider the fact that she may have had
other plans. Yeah, totally.
Especially, like, when they don't have that pre-existing relationship. I think that that's an important piece to it. It's, like,
for sure.
It's clear that, like, they do not have that pre-existing relationship. Yeah. So.
And he just, like, sticks around for the whole party. Like, it's just really weird. But anyways. Yeah. And then we also, like. Okay, I kind of want to talk a little bit about their relationship, like the dad and mom relationship here. Like, we do get snippets into some of the reasons why, I guess, that they're breaking up. Like,
one of them spends thousands of dollars on bonsai trees. The other one spends thousands of dollars on a boat.
You work and you work and you work on a marriage. And all they want to talk about is this boat. You work and you work on a boat. It's very intense. But yeah, like, we don't really get a lot of insight as to, like, what actually has led to their divorce. I guess we got a bit more from the episode previously with, like, Rachel's mom.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh, you know what we didn't talk about? We didn't talk about the whole other subplot line which is happening, which is, like, Phoebe's trying to help people escape Monica's boring birthday.
Yeah, they're trying to be like, I'm going to sneak you across the border.
It's just this hilarious moment of Monica having this super, super boring party of, like, wanting to play word games and people just being like, I hear you can get us out. And, yeah, it's excellent. There's no time! There's no time! And, yeah, we get a couple of excellent scenes of her trying to, like, sneak people out. Gunther was first at Monica's party and then Chandler and Joey's party. Yeah, there's just some excellent moments there.
Oh, and then Monica finds out and super betrayed.
Yeah. Phoebe! I love how she's like, I'm going to cause a distraction and then you can run. Like, she's like, oh, did someone forget to use a coaster? So good. Yeah, and then, yeah, we get that moment. I don't know about you, but did you see The Ring, the movie The Ring?
No, I never saw it.
Was it out at this time? I don't think so. I think it only came out in the early 2000s. Yeah, it did.
I really need to watch The Ring because I really don't think that I can go about a month without you mentioning it.
No.
I swear to God, I feel like on a monthly basis, The Ring comes up.
Okay, so my relationship with The Ring, and I'm going to bring it up specifically because Phoebe says, oh, I'm seeing water rings again. And, like, the big thing in the movie The Ring is that, like, you see rings
right.
at one point. Like, there's other signs involved, and, like, your face not showing up on photos and shit like that, creepy things. That's probably why I brought it up the other day. Mark brings it up too.
Yeah, I guess between the two of you, it's just like, I can't go at least 30 days without hearing.
Okay, so my relationship with The Ring is that I went to a friend's house when I was fucking like 12 years old. I was a child, okay? And she had two DVDs rented from Blockbusters. Yes, kids. We used to have to go to the store to get our DVDs.
We lived in the 90s.
Yeah, well, that was more like early 2000s. It was DVDs. Right? True. But anyways, there was two movies that were rented, and it was American Pie and...
Oh, my God.
And it was because her older sister had rented these two movies for a sleepover the night before. It was American Pie and The Ring, okay? And... me and my friend, who were like 11 and 12 at the time, we put on American Pie. And in the first scene of American Pie, Allison Hannigan's character goes underneath the table and gives, I don't know if it's American Pie 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever, but she goes under the table and gives her boyfriend or whatever a blowjob. And we were like 11 and 12.
Right,
and
it's like at the dinner table where like everyone else is there, right?
Yeah. And we were like, oh my God, this is so inappropriate for us. Like us being these like little 11 and 12 year olds, we're like, this is so inappropriate for us. Let's not watch this. So we put in The Ring, which is like a petrifying horror movie. And after that movie.
Also, I love how you're like 12 and you're like, this isn't appropriate for us.
Yeah, classic. It's Emily. Obviously, I'd do that.
See, I told you, you were originally the Monica.
But yeah, and I ended up watching The Ring and it was petrifying. And my friend called me like 7 days after and was like, 7 days, which is like the big thing. Or like whatever. She called me the day of and was like, 7 days. And it's also the reason why I do not like the band Evanescence, because after we watched the movie, we then went upstairs and listened to Evanescence. I'm realizing that this is the most early 2000s situation in the entire world. I'm like, we watched a DVD from Blockbusters and then listened to Evanescence.
That's so funny.
I just like associate Evanescence music to The Ring, and I literally... to this day, cannot listen to Evanescence in my apartment. Like, oh, wow. When I'm alone, I cannot listen to Evanescence.
I love these situations of, like this is, like, a fairly harmless representation of, like, how, like, trauma is, like, lasting. You know, like...
harmless? I had stopped sleeping in the parents' bed, and then after I watched that movie, literally went back to sleeping into the parents' bed. I was in grade 6. Like, I was, like... 12 or whatever. I was 11. Like, I like could not, I used to like not play piano because then my back would be exposed if I was sitting at the piano by myself. Like, I literally like could not function for like a year after.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was like the most traumatizing.
So wait, would you watch The Ring with me now?
I've rewatched it twice since, like as an adult, and it petrified me equally as much both times.
Oh my God.
I think the third time I watched it, like, I knew what to expect. Like, there's this whole scene where, like, a horse dies and you see, like, a bloody horse in the water. Like, there's just, like, a lot of this guy, like, anyways.
I know nothing of this movie. I know that no one wants to talk about it.
This guy, like, walks into, like, a bathtub and drops a toaster in it while he's in there to commit suicide in front of this woman. Like, just, like, super intense shit happens throughout this movie. And, like, I think all of my trauma comes from watching that movie. Like, my fear of boats. My fear of, like...
Do you have a fear of boats?
I have a fear of mirrors. And if you've seen The Ring, you know.
So funny.
Like, I had a fear of, like, looking at circle mirrors. You know, we had that old mirror in the parents' apartment that had, like... it was like wood and it was oval.
Yeah.
I could not be near that mirror because an exact similar mirror is in The Ring. Anyways, we've totally digressed, but.
Okay, so not so harmless trauma.
I think all of my anxieties actually stem from that movie. Like.
You should talk to your therapist about this.
Maybe. I don't know. So anyways, when
Phoebe says. No, I'm serious though.
Yeah, picking up phone calls of numbers that you don't know because it could be someone telling you you have 7 days to live. You know, that's why I hate children in movies.
So wait, if you don't pick up the call, do you still live? Or is it like, this is like a kind warning, you have 7 days to live.
You definitely still die, yeah.
Okay.
But, oh, you know when like you change channels and like it gets staticky and white and like on the screen? That's like...
that I know is associated with The Ring.
Yeah, so I can't watch, like, if that happens on a screen, like, I'm instant go into panic mode. Like.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of trauma. That's why, like, yeah, like, appliances near water freak me out. Like, I'm.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. Everyone should be freaked out by that.
No, but, like.
No, yeah.
To, like, I hated hair. I hated blow drying my hair because I was like, the water from my hair is going to get into the appliance and I'm going to get electrocuted. When literally hair dryers are meant to dry your hair. Anyways, okay, we digressed a lot.
We do digress. But this is all very insightful. I feel like I didn't know a lot of these things about you.
Yeah, anyways, so when there's that scene where Phoebe goes, ugh, I'm seeing water rings again. I, like, think of that every single time.
You're like,
exactly.
And your reaction is exactly like Monica's.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not because of the coaster, it's because of the ring. Well, actually.
It's a little bit of both.
Anyways, that was a very long digression, but yeah. What are other moments that you want to talk about from this episode? I feel like I just went to therapy talking about that. Like, that was really great. This podcast is my therapy.
Have you talked to anyone about that?
No, I don't think I've ever realized that connection before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, look at that.
Look at that.
You are all privy to my processing of trauma.
You guys, we're going to pivot in this podcast. We're now going to turn it into Emily and Quinn therapy.
Isn't that kind of what it already is?
Sometimes, yeah, I guess.
Okay, I do want to bring up a little bit less of like a fun, funny thing that happens, which we haven't touched on yet, which is like Joey being gross about women.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny that you were saying that because I'm literally staring at my thing that I wrote. Can I read you what I wrote?
Yeah, yeah. Go into it.
Man sleeps with woman and never calls back, so then she is alienated.
Okay, for context. So when they're planning on who to invite to Rachel's birthday, basically Monica starts naming people and Joey says, oh, you can't invite her because she steals stuff. And then, you know, obviously Chandler translates and he's like, maybe she doesn't steal stuff and Joey just slept with her and didn't call her back. And then you find out that he also did it with someone else and her roommate too, which is like real gross. And then we also get this really sly moment where Ross like gives him a like bro smile.
Yeah.
And so it's a gross Ross.
So we watched the DVD version. Is it in the Netflix version or the streaming version?
It is.
So angry that Netflix got rid of Friends.
It's real gross. But
yeah, it's real gross that Netflix got rid of Friends.
But yeah, it's interesting what you said there. I didn't really think of it that way, but you're totally right. Like
it's literally like, oh, we're not able to invite this person because she's going to be angry at me because I was a douchebag and essentially we know Joey, I manipulated her to sleep with me and then I never called her back.
Yeah. Oh my God. Let's
manipulated talk about her on false pretenses. And
yeah. Let's talk about all the gross men moments. So that's one. Ross giving him a smile is also one.
Yeah. Both Ross and Chandler kind of having this like impressed, like
they're giving each other like mental props kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like we get a gross moment.
Which I feel like is out of character for Ross, to be honest.
I don't know. Like, I do feel like there's a few moments like that. Maybe we can get into that in the spoily side of things. But I do feel like Ross sometimes like he like acts like he's more of a man's man. You know what I mean? Like he feels like he has to like get on the level of Joey and Chandler when he's actually not. But I also feel like that's how like 90% of toxic masculinity exists is like men thinking that other men expect them to be toxic men.
Yeah.
Like it's like performative.
Like I'm not actually like that, but I just need to blend in.
Yeah, but then like then what actually happens is that they all it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy of gross men.
Mm.
Like men think that in order to be manly, they have to be toxic. And so they are toxic in order to be men. It's like this weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It's like and it kind of is the same thing with like that like locker room talk, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, other gross men moments when
Joey is staring at Monica's fake boobs.
Yes.
Which turns into a hilarious moment because then she's like,
they're not her real. Boob.
They're not real. And Chandler's like, wow, it's like porno for clowns.
So good. And then we get a gross moment when Chandler and Joey are trying to bring only the women into their apartment and bring the men only into Monica and Rachel's apartment. Then we get a third gross man moment, a fourth actually.
Mm-hmm.
This is fun. We should do this every episode. The summary of the gross dude moments.
We should actually.
Then we get a gross moment when Chandler runs up to Joey in the middle of his party and says, dude, some girl just stuck her tongue down my throat. Like, he says, like, she
thought...
But it's,
like, clear that, yeah,
she thought like, he was someone
Dennis,
else.
And then, Dennis,
that's what it is.
Which, like, if someone does that, you gotta stop them.
Yeah, they're probably too drunk to consent. If they literally are so close to your face that they are kissing it and they still can't tell who you are. That person's fucked up drunk. Or on something else even, maybe. Yeah. So, anyways, that's also a really gross moment. I feel like Rachel's dad in general is kind of a gross
moment. I feel like now when I see those moments in TV shows where it's like a drunk woman kisses a guy and he's like, oh, like score.
Yeah.
I always like flash over to Parks and Recreation. And anyone who's seen the show, essentially there's two characters, like the way that they first meet, so Anne is, like, one of the main characters. She meets Chris Pratt, and she's drunk, and, like, they spend the whole night together, and she, like, does karaoke, and they drink. It's not Chris Pratt. But his name's Chris in...
Yeah.
Anyway, Anne meets Chris, and she's drunk, and they spend the whole night together. She's just like, you, we're gonna hang out. And then they spend the whole night together, they do karaoke, they, like, you know, whatever, go on, like, a drunk adventure. And then at the end of the night... She kisses him, and he's not drunk, and he just, like...
Chris Traeger,
yes. and he, you know, she kisses him, and he, like... And she goes to kiss him more, and he, like, stops her, puts her in a cab, and brings her home, essentially, like, or, like, sends her home.
Yeah.
And then, like, asks her out the next day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, like... And she's, like, all embarrassed by it, and it's just, like, oh, that's, like...
What
very
a concept.
Refreshing, yeah. You know, like
not taking advantage of someone who's super drunk.
And
there's another line.
You couldn't remember your phone number, so you gave me your phone. That's what happened. She's very drunk, and she can't remember her phone number, so she gives him her phone.
But I love that.
Anyway, I love Parks and Rec.
Okay, other things that happen. Okay, there's two last things I want to talk about, and we're at 57 minutes. So you tell me which one you want to talk first about.
Okay, go
therapy. Not my therapy.
Okay.
Monica's mom's therapy. Rachel's mom's therapy. Or Joey kissing Mrs. Green.
Let's do Joey kisses Mrs. Green.
Great. So we don't end on a rough note. So, like, arguably, this could be seen as, like, another gross dude moment. This assumption that an older woman who, you know, is... older than Joey would want to automatically, of course, be pleased by getting kissed non-consensually by a younger man. This kind of like idea that of course older women would consent to being kissed by younger men.
Yeah, I'm so like up in the air, like on principle, kissing someone at random when it's especially when it's like completely uncalled for, you know, it obviously is like, that's not consent. I mean, the context makes it feel like extremely like harmless, especially when you consider the fact that like for once Joey's not preying on someone. It's you know what I mean, like
he's trying to just be as harmless as possible in this moment.
But then I also have like this feeling where, and maybe it's like just like not valid to sort of just like write it off in this way, but like where like the character has been built in this way where it's like she's going through a divorce. She's kind of like enamored and enchanted with Rachel's life and her friends and her like her cute friends and like and kind of like is like weirdly wants to be more involved with it. And like I feel like there is like a pretext that like she would be okay with it outside of the fact that like just like her being like an older woman and would want to be kissed by a man.
I do think like, I think that we can look at it from two angles. One, looking at the entire episode as a whole, which is like this continuous, nonstop, slapstick, physical comedy from start to finish. Like this just like ridiculous things that like, and, like, that make no sense.
Cue all of the guys dancing with their arms in the air.
Yeah, exactly.
As did like, Dr. Green get to the other side of it without being seen.
There's, like, there's definitely endless moments where, like, it's just so unbelievably unrealistic that this would, like, go unnoticed by the two parents. Like, you know, like, just ridiculous things when Phoebe asks Rachel's mom to go to the bathroom with her. It'll be like, we're gal pals. Like, let's go. Like,
yeah.
Like, just a bunch
like
of...
like, it's all kind of really weird.
Yeah, super weird.
Crossing, like, boundaries in many ways.
Exactly.
Flip over to Ross peeling the
a cigarette
off of his lip.
Yeah,
being like, exactly. I just warmed the ear tips for you.
Yeah. So, like, definitely... think that if you look at it from, like, the episode as a whole, as this, like, comedic, funny, slapstick thing, then, like, yes, it just adds all to it.
Lots of boundaries were crossed.
Yeah, and I think, like, I think it's hilarious, and I wouldn't rewrite this episode without it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think, like...
It was, like, definitely what was needed for that, like that ridiculous end.
Yeah.
Like, that, like, complete, like... oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
That shocking moment.
Totally. But I do think...
it would have been nice if it was lined up with, like, earlier on in the episode, maybe Miss Green, like...
expressed that she thought Joey was cute,
like,
or something
like
that.
Like, yeah. You know, like, yeah. Like, yeah. I feel like it would have been better if it was lined up in that way. And then it was, like, this big thing where, like, Joey did kiss her. You know,
yeah,
it could have actually been, like, quite good.
That's,
you know,
true, yeah. But if you look at it from, like... the other perspective of just, like, I feel like we don't even have to go into the other perspective, because it's, like, we know. Like, we know that this is just not, like, a consensual way to, like, kiss someone, and, like, especially if you're talking about, like, looking at someone's body language, like, she completely collapses when he kisses her. Like, you know, and obviously but we're led to believe that she's, like, enamored by it, but, like... if you kiss someone and you're holding onto their face and they haven't touched you at all and they're totally collapsed in your arms, like, you're not really getting physical cue signs that they're into it. Like, that would be a moment where you check in.
Right.
You know, like, obviously, unless, like, you know, there's ifs and buts for every scenario. That's why consent is so complicated, because it's such a gray zone and not such a black and white situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, like, you know, I think of it like, if – I think two scenarios. One being, how would we perceive this scene if it was, like, Phoebe kissing Dr. Green? Would we feel differently about the scene? It would be hilarious, but it would be different. And how –
oh, my God, that would be hilarious.
And how would we feel about the scene if, like, it was an older man kissing a younger woman like this? Like,
mm-hmm.
if Joey was older than Mrs. Green, how would we feel about that age switch? You know, so it's like, there's like...
if Richard was there.
No, they're more than... oh, yeah.
Yeah, why wasn't Richard there?
Because the actor was unavailable.
Yeah, that's so weird.
It's weird that Richard wasn't there. He's, like, not even mentioned in it. It's
See, that's the thing. Every episode where Monica is at the diner...
yeah.
Richard is not in the episode at all. And there's just such this, like, disconnect.
Yeah, you don't really associate her being at the
diner. Yeah, it almost feels like there's, like, two metaverses happening, you know? And, like, some episodes we're seeing the metaverse of Monica in a relationship with Richard, and some of them are her not with Richard and working in a diner, you know? Like,
right. Yeah, it's interesting.
Anyway.
Okay, cool. Anyways, I feel like I've talked about all the things that I wanted to talk about. Oh, no, therapy.
Yeah, let's talk about therapy.
Okay. Quick
How therapy. Is your therapy going?
It's good. I'm in therapy now. It's a good call for me. Yeah. So, okay. The therapy scenario. So, basically, it's mentioned a couple times that she, Rachel's mom, what's her name? Alice? No, not Alice.
Mrs. Green?
Mrs. Green. What's her name? Oh, my God. Sandra. That's what it is. Sandra Green.
Wow. I would not have, yeah.
So she's talking about how, like, she's been in therapy for 3 weeks. And she has all of this insight, which, like, is real. Like, you go into therapy, and after 3 weeks, you're just like, if you've never been to therapy before, and then you go into therapy after 3 weeks, you're like, that's all you're thinking about. Like, I remember when I first went to therapy, I was, like, just, like, constantly processing my feelings. When you first start looking into, like, and any form of psychoanalysis, you're just, like, seeing it in everything that you do, right? But then you have this moment of her being, like, Rachel, you should go see a therapist. And then, you know, Rachel being like, you want me to see a therapist? You know, and she's like, you've chosen a boyfriend exactly like your father. And it's supposed to be this, like, huge joke that obviously Ross is not exactly like Dr. Green. He's just having to act like it in order to, like, get away with this scenario. But I just, like, I find it funny how this is such a different way of, like, I don't know. It's, like, different way of speaking about therapy. Like, Rachel's just, like, shocked by the concept that her mom would propose this when, like...
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, because it goes both... Like, it's kind of a toss-up here because, like, her mom is talking about how she's in therapy.
Yeah.
Although, I don't... Because we are, you know, in the age that we live now, I don't really know how that would be perceived when it was first put out.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, true. Like, was it trying to be a bit of, like, a joke? Like she's in therapy. Or was it just, like, we're just going to casually put in that, like, she's going through a divorce and she's in therapy. And
I thought that it was supposed to be implied that, like, it's, like, she's so all over the place that mm-hmm. she has to go see a therapist, you know?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like sometimes it's hard to tell with friends. Like, I often think about how, like, there are aspects of this show that are actually fairly, like, progressive mm-hmm. in, like, what they were trying to do. Like, there were certain things that, like, were pointed and in how they wanted to be progressive. Like, you know, I think we keep referring back to, like, that first episode where it's, like, you meet Monica and the first time mm-hmm. you meet this character, she's sleeping with someone on the first date, which was, yeah. like, lol, but, like, super progressive for the time, yeah. you know? You know, we also have, like, Carol and Susan, who, yes, mm-hmm. they're just, like, some, you know, rarities of characters that are on the side, but they're like a serious, non-sexualized lesbian couple who have a family, like have a family unit, you know, mm-hmm. and like that's like at the time like unheard of. Like just a few years beforehand, you know, Ellen DeGeneres' show was canceled because she came out as queer. It was a different time back then, right? And yeah. I feel like it's hard at this point now to always tell like what were the things that they were like. You know, because we look back and we're like, oh, they were doing, like, this was fucked up and this was ridiculous. And, like, oh, my God, I can't believe Joey's, you know, like, how they're portraying his relationship with women. You know, he's, like, the Barney of the 90s, you know, from How I Met Your Mother. And, like, mm-hmm. and, but there are aspects of the show that they actually were really kind of changing the game in some ways, you know? And yeah. I can't always tell, like, what is what when we go through it. You know what I mean? Either way, there was not enough support for therapy in this episode.
Yeah.
We all must love therapy. We all should go to therapy if we have the means. And we should all support people going to therapy. And everyone deserves therapy. We should also push and lobby for it to be part of healthcare. And if you don't have healthcare in your country, then you should push to have healthcare that includes also therapy.
Who do you feel is the best friend of the episode?
So I think that all of them deserve best friend of the episode because they all rallied so hard for Rachel. And I think that's a really beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So if you're listening to us on your main feed, this is where we come to an end, and we will see you next time on What the Phalange. And for the rest of you, let's head on to the spoily zone.
In the meantime, keep
deconstructing
and
diversifying
the
media.
I don't know why we're doing it this way. You consume.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.